I'm Phil Picardi with the NPR News Update for Monday, July 6. Thanks for pressing play. Today, Duluth's skyline is changing as it deepens its fashion footprint. Are those popping sounds firecrackers or gunfire? And more women get and give tattoos. First, more than 7 inches of rain has fallen in parts of the region, causing traffic backups this morning and local flooding. Tim Nelson has more.
The National Weather Service had one report of more than 7 inches of rain near River Falls. That spiked the Kinnickinnick River by 5 feet this morning. Minnehaha Creek in Minneapolis rose by more than 2.5 feet, and the Minnesota River at Fort Snelling was up by more than a foot this morning. Many locations reported at least 2 inches of rain overnight. That flooded cars in St. Cloud shortly after midnight. The rain also brought in reports of flooded streets in Woodbury and River Falls and road flooding along Interstate 494 in Plymouth and on Highway 100 in St. Louis Park, among other places. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Minneapolis police are investigating 3 shootings that wounded 8 people early yesterday. Matt Sepik reports.
Authorities say officers patrolling near the Central Library downtown heard multiple gunshots just after 2 a.m. and saw a crowd fleeing the area. Department spokesman John Elder says police found 2 males suffering from apparent gunshot wounds. Both were hospitalized, one with very serious injuries. Less than an hour later, officers heard more gunfire 3 blocks away in the Warehouse District. There they found a man and a woman who'd been shot. Police soon learned a 3rd victim from that incident had been taken to North Memorial Medical Center. All 3 had suffered non-life-threatening injuries. And in the 3rd incident, Elder says officers were at North Memorial working an unrelated case when 2 cars pulled in with 3 victims of a separate shooting on the north side that also happened around bar closing time. No one is in custody in any of the incidents.
Matt Sepik is one of our metro area reporters. He also has the latest on rental prices across the region. And if you pay the rent, Matt says, you know it's getting more expensive.
The latest S&P Case-Shiller Home Price Index shows a single-family home in the Twin Cities Metro cost about 3% more in April than it did in April of 2014. That year-over-year price increase remained unchanged from February and March. David Blitzer with S&P Dow Jones says it's good that growth has slowed from the double-digit increases we saw last year and in 2013.
That's a pace that we really couldn't sustain. We don't have enough people whose income is growing at 10% a year to be able to have them keep buying houses.
Across the country, Blitzer says housing price growth is also flattening out. Case-Shiller's national index rose about 4% on the year in April. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A new 11-story office tower is rising above Duluth this summer. It's the largest downtown commercial development in the city's history. And it has nothing to do with mining or shipping or tourism or healthcare, some of the region's economic mainstays. Rather, it will be the new headquarters for a women's fashion retailer. Dan Crocker reports.
Yes, you heard that right. Women's fashion in Duluth, Minnesota's capital of fleece and flannel. The company is Maurice's. A few weeks ago, CEO George Goldfarb stood in front of hundreds of employees and celebrated the placement of the final steel beam in the company's $80 million home.
Let's raise this steel beam with your signatures on it, 11 stories into the air, 153 feet above Superior Street, to celebrate the near completion of the structural steel phase.
Maurice's is bursting at the seams. It has 425 employees spread among 4 downtown buildings. And Goldfarb says the company isn't just growing in Duluth.
We continue to add new stores. We're adding at a pace of about 40 to 50 per year.
Over the past 10 years, Maurice's has more than doubled its number of stores to 945. It has 9,000 employees. In the past decade, Goldfarb says sales have grown from less than $400 million annually to $1 billion this year. Maurice's dates back to 1931, when Maurice and Ella Labovitz started a clothing shop in downtown Duluth. Now it's part of a larger retail group called Ascena that also owns brands like Dress Barn and Lane Bryant. One of the things that distinguishes Maurice's from those brands is location.
We've got this small to mid-market niche that there's not a lot of other players in. That's really key.
In Minnesota, that means places like Albert Lea in Brainerd and at the Miller Hill Mall in Duluth, where 24-year-old Nikki Lindholm says she likes the deals, like a pair of shoes she found last week.
They were only $7, so I was pretty excited about that. I love shoes.
But she also likes how Maurice's offers sizes that fit pretty much everyone.
I like to shop at Express a lot, too, but a problem I have with their clothes is their biggest size will probably fit like an 8-year-old. This store, like, they have clothes that fit any type of body size, so I appreciate that.
It's that focus on larger sizes that really sets Maurice's and other Ascena brands apart, says Poonam Goyal, a senior retail analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence.
If you look at apparel in general in the U.S., the category has not been growing, but Ascena has, including Maurice's, and that just goes to say that, you know, the market that they serve is probably underpenetrated, and that's where they're able to grow market share there.
And on the right side of the store, we kind of think about it as our casual girl.
Aaron Stern shows me around Maurice's mock store in its corporate offices. It looks almost identical to the real store at the mall, but this one displays clothing that won't be in stores for another couple months. Stern splits her time between Duluth and Los Angeles. She cut her teeth in the retail industry at The Gap, and she thinks Maurice's actually benefits by being based in Duluth.
And this sounds sort of nuts, but I grew up in it. If you're sitting in a place like Manhattan or Los Angeles and there is a lot of noise and you are constantly surrounded by your competitors and you're constantly thinking about the things that you're not doing.
She says Maurice's can stay focused on its customers who live in towns just like Duluth.
We're in a community that exactly mirrors the communities that our stores are in. We live the life here that our customers living.
Okay, but what about recruiting talent to this frigid northern outpost?
Well, usually we don't like to bring them in the winter, but no, besides that.
But you're not lying, are you?
No, I'm not lying.
That's honest.
Anne-Marie Stoyvich says about half her team is from Minnesota. The rest come from around the country.
They fall in love with the lake. They fall in love with the environment of downtown. And then when they come into the corporate office and start meeting the people, that's when we seal the deal.
Maurice's new headquarters, with giant glass windows overlooking the lake, will only make recruitment easier. It's scheduled to open next April, at which point the company plans to be close to another milestone, 1,000 stores in the U.S. and Canada. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
The University of Minnesota Duluth's Business School is cutting its MBA tuition by about 25%. Here's Alex Friedrich with more.
Next year, the Leibovitz School of Business and Economics will charge $28,000 to $32,000 for its part-time two-year Master's in Business Administration. Program Director Rajiv Vaidyanathan says enrollment in his small program is about 70 students. That's down about 20% from what it was 7 years ago. He hopes slashing tuition will boost enrollment to about 100 students within 2 years. That would generate more revenue through higher volume.
I do hear quite frequently from both students and employers about the fact that our tuition was so high. So I personally don't think it's a huge risk.
He says employers are contributing less toward their employees' MBAs than they used to. Alex Friedrich, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Jewish Family and Children's Service of Minneapolis is entering a two-year pilot program with Hennepin County to match recent veterans with county job openings. Mark Zedeklik has more.
Organizers hope to find work for 40 people who've been discharged from the military within the last 5 years. Cindy Uran of Jewish Family and Children's Service of Minneapolis says her organization has been reaching out to veteran communities. She says the jobs the veterans will be linked with can be anywhere within the county system, from corrections to the library.
It's interesting because in this initiative, we have the jobs, and then we're recruiting the veterans, where in most other programs here, we have the job seekers, but we don't have the jobs.
The program will operate with a $240,000 grant from Hennepin County. The jobs will start as paid training positions that could lead to full-time employment. Mark Zedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
ATVs now have greater access to roads and streets as a result of recent legislative actions here in Minnesota. Martin Moylan reports on that.
ATVs less than 50 inches wide can now be operated on road shoulders if the machines have a seatbelt, rollover protection, and a steering wheel. In addition, local governments can pass laws giving ATV riders access to public roads. Laura Preuss is a policy and program manager with the State Department of Natural Resources, Parks and Trails Division.
counties, cities, or towns can pass an ordinance that would allow people to ride an ATV on a road or a street to access businesses and residences or make some trail connections.
Starting this month, the state began using the width of ATVs in determining how the vehicles are classified and where they can be ridden.
Marty Moylan worked during the holiday weekend. Even still, he says he and most Minnesotans are not very far from a lake where you can catch a walleye.
The State Department of Natural Resources stocks about 1,000 lakes a year with walleye, augmenting the some 250 rivers and large lakes that have natural populations of the fish. Neil Vanderbosch is a fisheries program consultant with the DNR. He says the DNR's Lake Finder website gives anglers an idea of their chances of landing a walleye.
We show how many walleyes we've caught in our nets. And a good lake is, you know, anything probably over 7 per net is you could probably be expected to catch one. So we have quite a few of those that we stock that get up to that.
Vanderbosch says most walleye that are caught come from rivers and lakes with natural populations. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Well, did you see any fireworks over the 4th? Even though exploding fireworks are banned in Minnesota, you've probably heard the pop, pop, pop. That creates a problem for police. How are those sounds not mistaken for gunfire or the other way around? Brant Williams reported last week that sometimes Minneapolis police have a hard time.
Or a very large firecracker? How about this? Or this? These sounds were recorded by the Minneapolis gunshot detection system called ShotSpotter in 2011. The first was a gunshot. The second sound, a bottle rocket. The third, a series of gunshots. I played a few of the sounds for Minneapolis Police Commander Scott Gerlicher, who offered some educated guesses.
See, that's a roofing nail gun. No, I don't know.
Yeah,
that
see,
sounds to me like a gunshot. Actually.
Yeah, yeah, and those are shots fired.
Gerlicher says sometimes ShotSpotter can immediately differentiate between firecrackers and gunfire by comparing the unique sound wave patterns made by both types of explosions. When the system recognizes a gunshot or gunshots, it notifies the police dispatch center and lets them know where officers should go to investigate. But sometimes, Gerlicher says, the suspected sounds are sent nearly instantaneously to a ShotSpotter listening room in California.
And at this center, there's a group of analysts sitting in a room, and their entire job is to do nothing but listen to suspected gunfire events.
Gerlicher says analysts make split-second decisions and notify MPD dispatch only if they believe shots have been fired, but they don't always get it right.
We have had occasions where we never got a notification from ShotSpotter that there was a gunfire event, yet we know that somebody was actually shot on a corner or whatever, and so we've gone back to them and said, hey, check on your system here, and we've been able to then recover that sound file, which was miscoded either by the system or by the analyst reviewing that audio file.
ShotSpotter CEO Ralph Clark says both the sensors and the human analysts occasionally miss shots. He says the system has an accuracy rate of between 95 and 99%. However, he says that's probably overstated.
We are probably missing gunshots that aren't getting reported to us. And that's why we spend a lot of our energy with customers saying, just please, just call us if you ever have a confirmed gunshot that we don't detect.
In the first half of 2015, there were more than twice as many ShotSpotter activations than in the first half of last year. However, police officials say that increase may be due to the city's doubling of the coverage area of the ShotSpotter network. The city had the gunshot detection sensors installed in areas where shots fired calls are most common, such as parts of North and South Minneapolis. Police officials say the number of people shot at or hit by gunfire so far this year decreased slightly from this time last year. Gerlicher also says if you think you hear gunshots, don't investigate. Just call the police. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
The tattooed lady used to be an American oddity, but today in the U.S., more women than men are sporting ink. When it comes to those actually doing the tattooing, male artists still vastly outnumber females, an estimated 6-1. Enter Jackalope Tattoo in Minneapolis. As Nikki Tundell reports, it's the only tattoo shop in the Midwest with an entirely female staff.
The tattoo artists are rapidly and repeatedly puncturing the skin of their clients' shoulders, wrists, and rib cages. Yet the prevailing sound in this room is laughter. At Jackalope Tattoo, artists tease each other from behind their workstations. Patrons like Caroline Johnson join in.
It's nice to, like, hear people talking and interacting like friends while you're going through something that's kind of painful. It's really comforting.
Jackalope's Nichelle Gabbard describes the atmosphere as family-like, but she's quick to clarify.
It's like working with a bunch of sisters instead of working with a bunch of brothers who are gross and inappropriate.
The shop employs 7 tattoo artists, all females. It's a scenario that's almost unheard of in what remains a very male-dominated profession, says Bambi Wendt. She's been tattooing in the Twin Cities for over a decade.
The shops that I've worked at have been mostly male, maybe one other chick.
Misogyny, says Wendt, is a staple of the industry. And other staff members' past experiences support that notion. They recall the co-workers who commented more on their bodies than their work, and the patrons who rejected the very idea of a girl wielding a tattoo machine. Then, says artist Katie Kreck, there were the more direct remarks.
Oh, let me warm my hands in your thighs. And you're like, did you just say that to me?
It was stuff like that, says Wendt, that served as the inspiration for Jackalope, which she launched in September of 2013.
I think that the industry is ready to see a sort of kinder, gentler side.
We'll do the line work today and then go in and do all the color another day.
There are those who assume an all-female staff means all kinds of cutesy, and a fair number of flower motifs and cat designs do come out of this shop. On this afternoon, client Mae Weiss is getting a tattoo of the family's beloved feline, Virgil Tibbs, on her wrist.
It's named after a character from my dad's favorite TV show, In the Heat of the Night.
It's the ideal assignment for Kreck. The letters tattooed across the 27-year-old artist's knuckles spell out Cat Lady.
That's looking good.
Yeah, it's almost done.
Still, the shop gets plenty of requests for skulls and barbed wire and classic pinup girls, some with a modern twist.
Zombies. Zombie pinups are pretty popular these days.
As it turns out, the all-female aspect of Jackalope is reflected less in the content of the tattoos and more in the experience that goes along with getting them. Customer Nicole Luck specifically chose the shop for its low-key feel.
Some places are can be a little more intimidating or a little more, like, tough. Is it okay if I say that's not the vibe you guys give off? I don't want to hurt your feelings either.
Tattoo artist Katie Kreck says for many, the staff demographics are irrelevant. But the judgment-free atmosphere cultivated here has been a draw for members of the transgender community and for women who've had mastectomies and want their chests tattooed.
It's really great to have females working in the tattoo industry just as much as anything else where someone's going to be laying their hands on your body.
Is that right so far?
Yep.
You never know someone's personal history, and sometimes they survive some crazy trauma. A lot of that can be, the emotions can be triggered by the pain of the tattoo, and why not put someone in the most comfortable setting for them at that point?
Sunlight fills the studio. That alone makes Jackalope a standout among today's decidedly dark tattoo shops. And rather than metal, there's Madonna pumping through the speakers. The way owner Bambi Wendt sees it, Jackalope merely offers an alternative.
I've definitely had people who won't get tattooed by women. They just won't. If that's not what you're looking for, it's not what you're looking for. I can't change that for you.
Wendt does want to make one thing clear. Just because Jackalope has an all-female staff doesn't mean it only takes female clients.
People do ask me that, too. They're like, oh, does that mean you don't tattoo dudes? It's like, of course we tattoo dudes. We just tattoo rad dudes.
Rad dudes who don't mind a little 80s pop rock mixed in with the buzzing of the needles. Nikki Tundell, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
That's the NPR News Update podcast for Monday. I'm Phil Picardi. Thanks for listening. And I'll be back with the Tuesday Minnesota News on your schedule.